things I can and the wisdom to know the difference. So we will be meeting for an hour and a half, and we have three speakers on the topic, followed by a question and answer session. We may also have time for a couple of people to share for 2 minutes. Okay, I've asked Maureen to read the preamble.
Okay, the Al-Anon Family Groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is a self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to alcoholics, to the alcoholics.
Thank you, Maureen. Debbie, would you be willing to read the opening? Oh, yes. You give me a yes.
Hi, I'm Debbie. When I first considered reaching out to others, I might hesitate. Didn't I come to Al-Anon to focus on my individual experience, to seek my own recovery? Wouldn't contributing to the common good just divert me from personal progress? After finally learning to focus on myself, wouldn't helping others distract me from that goal? In helping others, we drop any pretense that I alone am in charge of my separate recovery. We acknowledge the common bond that unites us in the program, and we take steps, however halting and uneven, to align ourselves with the guidance of a higher power. By passing on the guidance we have received, we learn a new humility. Still, we might find the concept of doing service daunting, difficult, or frightening. The word itself has as much appeal as duty, responsibility, commitment, or work. The thought of participating in any activity might call up our worst fears of experiencing all over again the criticism, embarrassment, frustration, and even despair we have known in the past. Service and recovery are not independent of each other. Both are part of the spiritual awakening that continues to guide us. The more willing we become to practice all of this program, the more progress we can make in recovering from the effects of another's alcoholism and in living our lives more fully. What we may not notice beyond our fears is that Al-Anon gives us a chance to do either just a little or a lot. At first, we may experience some discomfort, but we can go at a pace that doesn't leave us overwhelmed. As we progress, we might begin to notice the other side of service. We are learning and growing at an extraordinary pace. And that's from When I Got Busy, I Got Better, pages 1 and 2 from the Al-Anon Family Groups.
Thank you, Debbie. And I've asked Patrick to read the workshop reading for this month.
I am Patrick. Tradition 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. Reaching out in service gave me a new perspective on our common welfare. My need for the support of the program didn't end when I began carrying the message. I didn't graduate from bewildered student to serene, wise, and calm teacher. Instead, I felt a deeper acceptance of sharing a common problem with all Al-Anon members in helping others. I was helping myself. When contributing to our common welfare, I was safeguarding my individual opportunity to make personal progress. When joining with others in Al-Anon service, I also noticed that together we could accomplish what we couldn't achieve separately. We became more effective. than the sum of our individual contributions. We helped each other grow. While service activity helped focus my attention on common welfare and unity, it didn't magically create a deeper sense of shared purpose in the rest of my life. It did, however, give me a basis of comparison for determining if a common welfare existed. Was unity a realistic goal in my dealings with family, friends, business, and community? Having applied the first tradition to service in Al-Anon, I began to distinguish between relationships in which I participated in a common welfare and ones which I didn't. I began to understand as well that when I felt no sense of unity with others, my personal welfare suffered. From When I Got Busy, I Got Better, pages 38 through 39.
Thank you, Patrick. So today we have three panelists. They'll each share for 15 minutes, and then the rest of the time will be used for your questions and possibly brief shares. Remember, any sharing are solely the opinion of members and not that of Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. So I'd like to introduce our first speaker from Montana, Elaine.
Good morning, everybody. I'd like to thank Helene for inviting me to speak. When I saw her name on the email, I thought, oh, is that Helene from Bozeman? And why is it coming from Arizona? But it's good to see you. I haven't seen you for some time. Just to introduce myself, I'm Elaine. I'm from Montana. I've been involved in service the entire time that I've been in the Al-Anon program, with the exception of the first year. And even then, I tried to make sure that I got to meetings early to, you know, help make coffee, set out literature, things like that. Because this was the place where I felt I actually fit in. So the questions that were asked of us today to speak on was, how has service deepened your understanding of Al-Anon's common welfare? In the meeting and reading, it mentions, I also noticed that together we could accomplish what we couldn't achieve separately. And please give some examples of how that happened in your service work and help deepen relationships in your program. Was unity a realistic goal in your dealings with family, friends, business, and community? And in what ways did the program and members of Al-Anon help you feel supported in your service position? Well, I think the very last question really relates to all of them. How has service deepened my understanding of Al-Anon's common welfare? Well, when I was new in the program, you know, I went to a lot of meetings when I was new. And although I felt like it was where I fit, I still didn't feel like I fit in. I still felt as though I was looking in from the outside. And, you know, it came to me during a meeting when, before the meeting, a bunch of the members were getting together to go to the first Al-Anon International in Salt Lake City. And the whole group was getting together and they were going in, you know, several cars, and they were all really excited about going to this conference. And I had no part in that. And what came to me was, oh, that's that participation thing. So I'm so grateful that, you know, I got started in service by having somebody come to me and say, hey, we need a district treasurer. And I know that you do bookkeeping, and I think you would do a great job. So that's my mantra when I look for people to do service, because it has the key words of we need and you would do great. And for the most part, it seems to bring people in. The word need certainly appeals to us. How has service work deepened my understanding of our common welfare? Is through service work, I've been able to, you know, create bonds and relationships with people in the program worldwide. And in doing that, being exposed to, you know, more people's experience, strength, and hope, you know, the situations in their life that bring them to Al-Anon, the tools that they use to have a better life, to share with us, and realizing that, hey, I am not the center of the universe. That it takes an entire community to keep this organization going and to keep it healthy. And it's important for me to share my ideas, but that doesn't mean that my ideas are automatically a go. It's what works for the most people in the program. And that's what common welfare refers to, is what works for all or most. When I came into Al-Anon, I had a pretty limited view of my reality. It was about me. Today, I try to keep it more about how does this affect, you know, my family as a whole? How does this affect my business as a whole? How does this affect my community as a whole? How does this affect Al-Anon as a whole? The next one was, I noticed that together we could accomplish what we couldn't achieve separately. I don't know that I can say enough about that because, of course, coming into Al-Anon, why have somebody else do it when I know I can do it better? I think every service position that I've took, that I've involved myself in, has required me to reach out for assistance from other members of Al-Anon, including opening meetings, putting out literature, the smallest things, making coffee. I'm not going to be there 100% of the time. I need assistance with that. And truly, you know, my idea the first time that I took GR was I was going to be at every meeting. I was going to be at every district meeting, and I'm going to do this. Well, you know, that wasn't possible. And so, you know, I had to reach out for help. And that's what this program has really done for me the most, is to be able to reach out for help, to not sit back and be quiet when I had a question, when I needed assistance. And in doing that, I brought more people into that particular service, that particular situation, and allowed them to have the experience that they had in helping me. And, you know, those are the people that come into service, are the ones that, you know, like my sponsees, I ask that they do service work. It doesn't have to be anything big. It just has to be something. And, you know, and I see their growth in doing service work. It's pretty amazing, even the smallest thing, to show, you know, that they're, you know, accountable to the group to make sure the door's open, and learning to reach out for help when they can't, you know, provide the service that they stood for. For me, I think I can't say that I didn't have that experience with any of my dealings with my service work. I think the biggest example of that for me was when I became delegate. 2 days after I was voted in, my husband became very ill. And I still get teary when I talk about this, so you'll have to excuse me. And just before my final World Service Conference, he died. Had it not been for my alternate delegate and my closely formed relationships because of the service work that I did, you know, I would not have gotten through that period of time in my life, and they continue to be my strength when things are tough, because life is a life, and this program is learning to live life on life's terms. And that's what service does for me, is it presents situations that are not always smooth, not always agreeable. And my first sponsor always told me, Elaine, this is not a popularity contest. And I, you know, I never really understood why she said that to me in those early years of my program, but today I understand that it's not a popularity contest. It's about doing what's best for our common welfare, you know, to be thinking about us as a whole, as the entire Al-Anon, worldwide Al-Anon fellowship. And for me, you know, that has helped change my perception of, you know, other people, how they think, and what it is that I really want to do with this program in my life. And was unity a realistic goal in dealings with your family, friends, business, and community? You know, when I was newer in the program, I really did have those big hopes that, you know, unity was going to be something that happened in all walks of my life. I can't say that that's true. You know, I have had to purge some people from my life for, you know, my betterment, for my family's betterment. Dealings with my family is about my perception, and all of that is about my perception. I cannot say that my family is completely unified at this point, but I do that. I know that my part in my family is different than it used to be. And my part in my family is that I work my program, that I be the best person that I can be, and that I allow the other people in my family to do the things that they need to do and not direct them or write a script and expect them to stay with that script. In what ways did the program and members of Al-Anon help you feel supported in your service position? Well, you know, like I said, I don't think I ever took a service position where there was not somebody that could help or a situation that I could not discuss with another Al-Anon member to help resolve or take to the next level. And I was able to take all of that, you know, into the other areas of my life. Just to make my life more spiritual based, to have those people in my life that support me in that endeavor, and to keep Al-Anon as a whole, you know, what it was, what I found when I came to Al-Anon, you know, we had some issues in my district when I was new in the program. Our district meetings were very contentious. And there were many times I left that meeting thinking, God, what am I doing here? This is horrible. And, you know, but I stuck with it. My sponsor, I can't say enough about having a good sponsor. You know, she, you know, got me through, you know, those confrontations that I hated and allowed me to find my way through situations where it would have been a time prior to that I would have just walked away from it. I was good at just cutting out. You know, if I didn't, you know, agree with what was happening, I was out of there. You know, today I've been 20 plus years in the program and haven't walked away. That's a huge accomplishment for me. I do remember at one point her expressing to me when I, you know, had expressed that, God, people are so angry at that meeting. And she just said, you know, Elaine, you've got to realize that sometimes passion looks like anger. So that was huge because today, even, you know, even when I, at work, when I see anger, I can change my perspective of that and look at it as passion. And in doing that, I can have empathy in that situation for that person. And I think a really important part of this program is the feeling of unity and love that does exist here. No matter what the situation that is going on, you know, I learned to argue at that district meeting and then give hugs afterwards and to not take things personally or hold things personally against other people. And that is such a huge part of my life right now and always will be, because I will take things personally first. You know, if that's my first thought, is to take things personally, and the tools of this program help me to get out of that ideology very quickly and to come back to the idea that this is about common welfare. This is about not what Elaine wants, but what is best for this program, for the business I work for my family. So I think with that, I'm not even sure if I've gone 15 minutes because I forgot what time I started. But I really can't say enough about service. One of my favorite books in this program is Paths to Recovery. My book is a first edition, bought the first year it was put out, and it is beat up. It is beat up. And that's just the way I like it. It's colorful. It's got writing. It's got the covers coming off. It's my favorite book in this program for things like service work. So that's all I've got today. Thanks.
Thank you, Elaine. Great talk. And our next speaker is Christine from Michigan.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Christine. And I'm nervous. I'm happy to be here. And thank you very much for asking me to share today. I was asked to share in March, but our local North Central Regional Delegates meeting is going to be that day. So here I am today instead. So thank you for having me. Tradition one is the groundwork of my traditions for me, bringing us together and keeping us together. I qualify to be here. I come from the suburbs of Toronto, and we qualify when we share. So I just want to do that quickly. I grew up in a home with alcohol as a problem, and I started to date a guy, and his AA sponsor suggested I go to Al-Anon to keep our relationship together, to make it work. And that was a gift he gave me that day. My first Al-Anon meeting was September 15th, 1984. And for that, I'm very grateful you all were here. And I hope we all can keep coming back. So I started going to the meetings. First meeting I went to was in a town called Brampton in Ontario, Canada, St. Jude's. And the members there saw that I was a flight risk and decided that they would give me the key. I would be the key holder. And what that gave me was a purpose to keep coming back, because I didn't know anybody else had the key. And of course they did, right? Other members had the key. So I started to belong. I felt like I belonged there. And I hadn't really felt like I belonged anywhere before I started to come to Al-Anon. Growing up in an alcoholic home, I had just left a relationship with an alcoholic drug addict. I had so many fears, character defects, that I was really struggling. I was really struggling. So I was glad to be here. I was quiet for like 6 months because I saw my mother and everyone in the rooms. So that meeting gave me the groundwork for my Al-Anon career. And I'm very grateful for them. A few of the members were very active in service, especially Alateen. Our group rep was also the district rep, which was also the Alateen sponsor. And I love that woman, Shannon. She was an incredible woman. And I saw the program light up in them. I saw the smiles on their face. I saw the joy in their life, and I really wanted that. So what I heard was, start following them. We'd go out for hamburgers after the meeting. I don't know how I did that. It would have been like 9:30 at night to a restaurant called Harvey's. It's truly Canadian. And I started to chat with them, and I started to build a relationship. They scared me because they had all this wisdom, and I didn't know where they were getting it from. So I started to feel like I belonged, and I started to join that group, and I started to see what they were doing to get the recovery they had. For unity, the signalness of purpose is really important to me. And that meeting was really strong in that way, where they brought a common bond that they had been affected by someone else's drinking to the table. There was trust and anonymity, which was really important because that was the town I grew up in, and everybody knew everybody. There were people in that room that played baseball with my parents. There were people in that room that I went to school with, but anonymity was really important to me, and they held that. And that was a big deal. Our three legacies, wow. You know, when I first got here, it was just the slogans that I could hang on to. But working the three legacies, we now have a concept meeting, in case anybody's interested, on the second and fourth Thursday of every month on Zoom. Flo Ann has that information if you're looking for a concept meeting. We just started it in September. We had 39 people from all over Canada, the United States, join us last meeting. So those legacies are important to me. And then the conference approved literature, which helps me, that I know that any meeting I go to, there is the unity there, that we are talking about the same thing. We are using the same information. I'm not confusing a newcomer. And that makes me feel like I'm at home. It grounds me. I feel like I belong. So the new perspective on my life, I already explained the belonging part. There was no judgment, no criticism, no gossip. Wow, where else can you get that? I didn't get that at church or anywhere else. And what that allowed me to do is to be me, to be able to put myself out there and share on a meeting like this. I have no clue who's listening, but I can do that because I know you're not going to judge or criticize or gossip. You're going to love and respect me for who I am, and you're going to want me to succeed. And that was a key point in Al-Anon for me. The members here are not out to get me. They're out to help me succeed in Al-Anon. I allow myself today to be human. I always had to be perfect. I thought that was the expectations of my family, that I be perfect. And when I wasn't, I beat myself up horribly. I allow myself today to make mistakes, which gives me the ability to try new things, things I haven't done before. You know, this emerging technology with Zoom, we've all had to learn, and we've all made mistakes. Hey, I knocked a whole meeting out one day and they all had to come back in. But we're learning, and I'm willing to try. I'm willing to have an open heart and an open mind to try something new. Today I have a sponsor, a service sponsor, who is from the suburbs of Toronto. And I meet with her it used to be biweekly, it's every month now. And what a benefit and what a gift she is to me. It gives me someone I can talk to about what's going on in my service life, because not always do I like it. So I need someone to just, blurt it out to. And then I can hear myself and I can see some goals and I can feel some solutions coming forth. And that service sponsor has really worked in my Al-Anon program, reaching out. I know whenever I've reached out, someone has been there, whether it be, the area treasurer. When I became treasurer, she was my mentor. I don't know what I would have done without her. The questions I had, unbelievable. I was scared. The first meeting, she fixed all of my documents because they were all a mess. So she helped, help me out with that. But you all are there. And when someone reaches out to me, I want to be there. We recently in Michigan have lost two of our area leaders. Our chairperson died a month ago. And one of our past delegates passed away. And it has really left me with a sense of loss. And I'm grieving that because I expected him to be around to mentor me as I'm the new incoming delegate. And so I'm grasping other places for information and for support and for love. And you all answer the phone. Where else do you get someone who answers the phone when you really need it? So today I try to answer the phone when someone calls. I try to be there. I try to be that person. And most of the time they're not asking for anything from me. I'm just trying to listen, just to listen. So I loved what you said about passion can sometimes look like anger. Oh my God, I needed to hear that. Thank you so much for that one. At our area level, building relationships, they're based on those three legacies now. They used to be, based on gossip and what he said, she said kind of stuff. My relationships are based on our three legacies. And we work together for this tradition, for the common goal. And we are no longer alone in this journey. service has given me the ability to have some self-esteem, to rebuild my self-esteem, to be able to have some courage. My little five-year-old granddaughter this week at lunch said to me, "Grandma, my daddy taught me that you can let fear win the battle or courage win the battle. Fear win the battle or courage win the battle." What a cutie. She's only 5 years old. And I bring that to you because I've been using that all week long. Fear or courage with all that's going on, you know, in our world and how different our holidays are all going to look, and not have those pre-existing expectations, to be able to go with the flow and to be able to still be present. And that's what Al-Anon has given me, the ability to be present. I don't have to be in tomorrow of what's going to happen. I don't have to be in yesterday. I can be here today in Al-Anon in this meeting. Sharing recently with a member about opinions and feelings and solutions, I've learned to let it go. And we talked about letting things go. No longer does it have to be Christine's agenda. I can now state my opinion and let it go. I don't have to manipulate, connive, control the members in this group, in the area level or in my home group. I can say what I mean what I say, and just let it go. And then the hard part for me that I've worked on is I can support whatever the membership has decided. And that is an important thing for me, to support that. Even if it's not my agenda, it's my higher power's agenda who has spoken through this group. So I don't have to do it alone anymore, because Christine doesn't have all the answers. I only have the limited experience that I've been given. And how often have I sat in a meeting with someone and I know how it's going to go, you know, the business meeting, and person hasn't been there very long, says, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I go, "I didn't even think of that. What a great solution." Open mind and open heart to listen. You know, my higher power is in charge today. And I can share all those thoughts, but I can't control the outcome anymore. You know, we are a family that has moved. So I've moved around in my Al-Anon career, started in the suburbs of Toronto, went, you know, from one side of the city to the other, then went to Bowling Green, Kentucky, which was a great change for us, but what a blessing. And then up to Michigan, to Virginia, back to Michigan. And what has been a common denominator there is the love and respect and support I get from Al-Anon. I go into a new town, and who is there but my Al-Anon family? They're always there, which is so cool. I've had people say to me, "Well, how'd you get to meet people so quickly? You have all these friends." I went to Al-Anon, you know, and we've all felt that welcoming and that belonging. I'm so grateful for that today. So very grateful. The Al-Anon traditions in my personal life, we have used these with raising our family. I have a tradition study group. I sat in a member's house, was it like every other Monday, I think it was, for 3 years studying the traditions. And now we have a Monday night tradition group. And what a change that has made in me when I can look at these and see them as how I can work them in my home. Unity as a whole, so we brought our whole family in when we would have discussions, even when the kids were younger, so they could start seeing how decisions were made and how the process happened. And so we've used all of these three legacies in our home as well, meaning my husband, who is still in AA, is the man I'm married to, the one I went to Al-Anon for. but we still use them today. And it has given our house, you know, the safety and security that our children now will text me, "Can I share your information? I know somebody who needs Al-Anon or who needs AA." How cool is that? It brings tears to my eyes, because we have been there and they know. They've watched their parents grow. They've watched us change. The one thing that I always try to remember as I start to close is, today I serve Al-Anon to my best ability. always knowing that God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. So I have this little problem I called a raise my hand problem. I tend to put my hand up whenever possible. My higher power, is he pulling it? He may be. And try to give back to this program that freely gave to me, as you all did. And I just want to thank you all for being here today. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. That was great. And our third speaker today is Therese from Michigan.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Therese. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Glad to be here. Oh my gosh, I'm inspired by the first two speakers. Elaine, wow, you have sure done a lot. And Christine, my gosh, I haven't seen you since Flo Ann left Michigan. So nice to see you on a virtual platform in Arizona. That's kind of crazy. But what you said about no matter where we go, we have friends. And that's what I feel like. You guys, you're my people. And I'm grateful that you're here. And I thank Kay, who I don't think is here, but Kay, thank you for inviting me to talk. It's been a while since that I've been asked to talk. So this is kind of cool. Christine, I also appreciated what you said about qualifying. I really think it's important to qualify. I do qualify for Al-Anon. I came in the first go around in about 1995 when I was married to an alcoholic. And I like to call that my academic approach to recovery. I bought the books and I read them to try to figure out how to make him stop being such an idiot. And it didn't work. I went to a couple of meetings, didn't work. So obviously Al-Anon didn't work, I thought, so I left Al-Anon. And it wasn't until 2009, when I was in my second marriage to, yes, an addict, when I decided I needed to go back to Al-Anon. Not sure really how I really got here, but I got inspired and I realized that I was starting to feel in my marriage like I used to feel when I was a kid. I'm also an adult child of alcoholics. And somehow I knew that what Al-Anon had, I needed some more of it. I needed the support. So I got back to Al-Anon, and I'll share with you a little bit about my service story. You know, at first when I got this call, and the first thing they said, go buy this book. I didn't want to do that. I've been avoiding this book for the last 11 years, and I thought I had done that pretty well. When I got busy, I got better. No, when I get busy, I get really spinny in my head. I need to settle down. So this is not a good mantra for me. I told people before the meeting, I'm a workaholic. I do too much, so I don't need to get busier. I need to stop, ask my higher power for direction, and then do something. So once I got past that, I did read the book, and I read the pages that this talk was going to be about. Interestingly, I chose to read these pages the day we were meeting. We have a meeting before the meeting where we're going through the traditions right now. And this was, we were reading about tradition one that particular night. So we talked a little bit about this. So my friends helped me understand how the traditions and service work together. I hadn't even considered that. And, you know, Elaine, when you were talking about seeing how the tradition one worked early on, it's taken me 10 years to figure this out, and I'm still not even sure. So I must be a slow learner. So I decided how I would approach this talk is to kind of give you an idea of the inventory and what emerged for me when I looked at my history with service. The first thing I will tell you is when I heard this idea of doing service, I went, no, I've been serving people my whole life. They don't appreciate me. That's not going to get me better. So I immediately had a bad attitude about service. But my sponsor didn't push it. She didn't require me to do anything. She said, you know, not in so many words, this is your recovery. It depends on how much better you want to get and how fast you want to get better. So the only thing that I do know, looking back, what my original service was just showing up at meetings and vomiting my story. Today, 11 years later, I need to hear those stories. I need to hear what it was like, because I don't ever want to go back to that way of living. And when a newcomer comes in, they're doing me a service as a person 10 years in or 11 years in. Listening is another thing that I did. I never got listened to when I grew up. I'm the youngest of eight kids, alcoholic family, completely chaotic. Nobody listened to me. So being listened to was a service to me as a newcomer. The other, and that's for even today, that's a service for me. Sharing at meetings, that's another way that I've done service. And it's funny because I think back to that first year, I would listen to people and I think, you know, it's really interesting how we read this reading. And then these women, that was mostly women, these women would apply it to their lives. I thought, I have no idea how they do that. I mean, I was in awe of that because my brain was so scrambled when I first came into Al-Anon. I just didn't know how they were applying this, but I kept coming back. Another way of doing service was, I know how to read, so I would read the opening script, or I would read the traditions, or I read the steps. I figured I could do that. I got a little bit more confident, and I would open meetings or chair meetings. Then a little while later, my sponsor asked me if I would do an open talk, which I thought I was completely unqualified to do, but she said, no, you can do that. So I, at my home group on Saturday, which was my home group at that time, I did an open talk. Then she asked me to do a talk at our Tri-County conference, and I talked there. So that, again, that was a new way of doing service. And that was very helpful to me because I had never, to say my story in front of people and not be ridiculed was a very healing experience for me. In my family, you didn't talk about the real stuff. So the idea that I could actually talk about the real stuff and have people accept me despite what I might have to say. The next thing that happened, as I did my inventory on service, was being a sponsor. After the talk that I gave at my home group, somebody actually approached me and asked me if I would sponsor her. I didn't say no, but I'm not sure I said yes, because I thought, what in the world do I have to offer this person? I still haven't figured it all out. But I asked my sponsor what she thought. And she said, yeah, you can sponsor somebody. All you have to do is share with her what you've done before, what you've done with me. Okay, then I can do that. So I started being the sponsor of somebody. And that really reinforced my my recovery. The next thing that happened, I guess my sponsor did suggest one thing. We had an opening in our office, an office coordinator role came up. And she said, you know, they need somebody at the office. And I'm kind of organized, OCD, some people might say, but it's a strength and it's a weakness. She said, maybe you could be our office coordinator. So I went there. Well, this was my entree into that. I walk into the office and the first thing I see is a sign that's crooked. I'm like, really? We can't have a sign be straight. And then everything that the person would tell me I needed to do, in my head, I'm criticizing how they're doing it and how it needs to be different. I wasn't probably qualified. I was overqualified for the job, but I had, not maybe a real open attitude. So anyhow, at this meeting or at this job, it happens during the group rep meeting. And I heard them talking about public outreach, and the person who was doing public outreach didn't like doing it. Well, I do like doing that sort of stuff, and I really hate doing the office stuff. So I asked her if I could do that job, and she said, yeah. So I started doing public outreach, and that was lots of fun. I'm a salesperson, so I like talking to people, but the bad part is I'm a salesperson, and I thought that salespeople are trained to manipulate outcomes. And that's not what public outreach is about. So I had to completely shift my mindset into, no, you're just carrying a message and then you just walk away. You don't do anything beyond carry the message. But it was a huge growing experience for me. And I began to work with a team of people. And that was a new thing for me too. I grew up in the, even though I was surrounded by a bunch of people in my family, if it's got to be, it's up to me. And I never learned how to work with a group of people. And I learned how to allow the group to be bigger than me. Elaine had mentioned that in the reading. Then about that time, I was the public outreach coordinator for our county. And the word came down that, well, part of my story is I found out I was allergic to alcohol and I joined AA after I was in Al-Anon. So then when I was public outreach coordinator, you can't be a coordinator, somebody who's going to rise up if you're in both programs. So I had to back out of that. And God had a way of doing for me what I can't do for myself. I didn't need to do anymore. So it was probably a really good thing. I still was doing some public outreach, but I decided that I would get involved in Alateen. That was probably the best service work I could have ever done because I'm an adult child, and sitting with those kids every week helped me get in touch with that kid and heal some of those things. So that was very, very helpful. So that's kind of the chronology of it. What does my service look like today? Again, I can't rise to a level beyond the group because of who I am, right? And that's okay because I can still sponsor people. I can still talk. I can still share my story. I can still show up at meetings. I can still share. We just had to shift, obviously pivot to a more virtual platform. And as it turns out, one of the other fellowships I'm part of has this really, really slick script for how to run a phone meeting. So I was able to adapt that to my home groups and, you know, set up the phone line. That's the kind of service that I do now. I can be a treasurer. I can do those sorts of things. But I think my service story, if I had to encapsulate it, it's really, it's for the newcomer because I'm not I haven't really taken on a lot of service responsibility up the hierarchy, but I do know how to put the 12 step into practice within my group and with members of the fellowship. So, I still have three more minutes to go. Hot dog. Trying to think of other pieces of service that have been important to me. I think being on the receiving end of service is another point that I'd like to make. I think about if those people who come to meetings stopped coming to meetings, where I would be, dead or insane. I am so grateful for the people who have been around for a really long time, who don't have active alcoholism in their life, but they continue to come back. Those are the people who saved my life. You know, my sponsor who agreed to be my sponsor, I told somebody at the beginning of the meeting, I've gotten two calls about being a sponsor. And I got a text about 45 minutes ago from somebody who needs a new sponsor. And two of the people that I've talked to, they're doing some real studying or research on finding a sponsor. I mean, they got some specific things they're looking for, which is cool. With me, I was just desperate and I needed to get out of pain and I needed somebody to walk me through the steps. And I wasn't looking for anything other than they needed to be a strong personality because sometimes I can be a force to be reckoned with. Not that I try, just the way God made me. So when I went to this meeting in desperation and said, God, I think I need a sponsor. Please make it evident who this person needs to be because I got to have a sponsor. Wouldn't you know, somebody showed up. And I saw somebody here. There's a Hope P. My sponsor is Hope B. And she became my sponsor after meeting me one time. And I asked her, why did you decide to be my sponsor? Why did you say yes? She said, because your name is Therese Marie, and that's my confirmation name. And every time I hear the name Therese, I know God's trying to get my attention on something. So that's about how much thought she puts into doing service. And I think that kind of trickles down to me. I am just available. If, you know, it's that whole declaration, you know, when somebody reaches out their hand, yeah, I want to be there to help. And I do that via whatever sort of service I can offer. And thank you again for listening. And I think that's about all I have to share about service.
Thanks, Therese. That was great. Now I'll turn the meeting over and the rest of the time to our moderator, Maureen.
Hi, everybody. Great shares. I'm glad you guys agreed to be here today and speak on the topic of Tradition One. I've got a few questions from our membership, and we'll answer those. I'll let you know who the question is for, or if it's for all of you. And if, hey, if one of them calls out to you specifically and I don't ask, please let me know. I think we'll start with everyone. Let's ask this question for all three speakers, and let's see, if Kristen want to go first, And the question is, what was your favorite service position and what did you learn from it?
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine. I've loved them all. I'm trying to think what was my favorite one. I think I learned the most as treasurer, area treasurer. I think my favorite position was technical coordinator, although it bit me in the butt often because I'm not a techie. My kids laughed when they found out that I was technical coordinator. But I think it was the most fun. It meant I was at all the meetings and I could share some of the emerging technology and try and, you know, figure out microphones. And it was a more relaxed position and I really enjoyed it.
Okay, thanks, Christine. Is it Therese or Teresa?
Therese.
What was your favorite service position?
Hands down, Alateen sponsor, being a group sponsor, best thing I could have ever done, sitting with those kids every week. And because I learned how to trust and to not judge.
Okay, great, thanks. And Elaine, what was your favorite service position?
I would have to say my favorite was GR, but my most fun was forum coordinator. Because I could get the districts in the area to invite me to do workshops. And I think that's when I probably made the most contacts in my program too, was going out and doing workshops. And Montana is a huge state, so it requires a lot of travel. And I always took people with me, got them in the car, locked the door and told them there's food when we got there. So that was probably my favorite.
Okay, great, thanks. Christine, you spoke of being open-minded. Have you always been open-minded, or how did that develop through service?
No, I have not always been open-minded. I grew up in a house where children were to be seen and not heard. And my mother ruled the house with a heavy fist, and her mind was extremely closed. And so when I got to Al-Anon, I had become that one person I didn't want to be. And I was very closed-minded. What I've used is this program, working through those steps, taking a look at my character defects and being able to talk it through with others and allowing myself to be human and make mistakes. I think part of my closed-mindedness was I never allowed myself the dignity of making a mistake. So I was always closed. It had to be only the way Christine wanted it to be done because Christine didn't know anything different. And I was afraid of doing something wrong. So no, I was not always open-minded, and I've used the three legacies.
Perfect. Teresa, I was going to ask you something along the similar line. You talked about how difficult or easy was it for you to retrain your mind when you were sort of that your mind as a salesperson, you're trained to, you know, make a sale. How difficult or easy was that to change your way of thinking when you were doing public outreach?
It was really hard, and it took a lot of pain, and it took me trying to force solutions and getting nowhere. And after, that's my way of learning. Pain is the great motivator for me to learn something. And so I would go and try to do something and get frustrated, and I'd go to my sponsor and she'd say, trying to force a solution. And I go try and do it again, and I'd go back, still trying to force a solution. And after a few times, I'd realize, okay, I think I need to change my behavior. And I had to act myself into right thinking. I had to just, even though my mindset wasn't there, I had to change my behavior. And then ultimately my mind caught up with my body.
Thank you. The next question is for everyone. How does participating in Al-Anon help you communicate more effectively with loved ones or others you have a problem with? Let's see, Christine, and then Elaine.
I think conflict resolution is a big part of it. You know, I avoid conflict like the plague. I do not get myself in the middle of it. Al-Anon has taught me sayings like, you know, interesting perspective, allowing people to have their own opinion, or the whole principles above personalities, being able to understand that we are all part of this fellowship, and that we all didn't get here because we were well. We got here because we were suffering from the effects of someone else's drinking. And compassion, having compassion for others, and being able to understand that they are where they are today, and I am where I am today. So thank you.
Thanks. Link.
I would also have to say conflict resolution. I wasn't a person that shied away from conflict. I always thought, bring it, and would escalate just about everything I could. and then try to get the last word. I knew that was not what Al-Anon was about. And I learned that through those difficult district meetings and watching how our chairperson dealt with it. When things got too hot and heavy, we'd stop and say the Serenity Prayer again. We didn't allow, you know, for name calling or pointing, and we tried to keep voices, at a minimum. And just being able to watch that process really taught me a lot about conflict resolution, about how to phrase things differently. And I was really excited when the World Service Office, or the Literature Committee, I should say, developed the conflict resolution tool that we have. So if you have not checked that out yet, I would suggest, getting that packet, because it's actually a packet, and, presenting it to your group, reading it yourself. It's a wonderful tool that I use at work. I used to work for a women's pre-release center, and that conflict resolution tool came out the first year that I worked there, and it really probably changed the landscape of that position for me. So thanks.
Thank you.
Two things come to my mind. I used to be a chronic over-explainer. Like if I needed to really tell you exactly what needed to happen, and then if you didn't do it, now I need to explain to you another way and come at it. I don't do that anymore. I've gotten better at that. The other thing that I've noticed that I don't do, when I have a disagreement with somebody, I just allow there to be the disagreement. I don't, let's say I have a disagreement with Flo Ann, I don't call Christine to tell her what's going on with Flo Ann so that she can then call Elaine, and then maybe it'll get back through Helene. Then I don't do that triangulation stuff. My first husband called it something else, but it's got the F word in it, so I won't say it. I don't do that anymore. I keep it between me and the person. And I heard this at a meeting last weekend. When somebody really ticks this guy off, what he says is, "Now you've really given me something to think about." I thought that was great. So I learned that stuff at meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. That sounds like the way I would communicate with my sisters when we were younger. No longer do that. Okay, I'm going to ask Patrick if he'd like to speak for a couple minutes on the topic of Tradition One. Thanks, Patrick.
Hi, I'm Patrick. Good to be here. I've enjoyed this so much. I am particularly enjoyed hearing about the legacies. So many people, when I share about the legacies, go, what's that? And here, I've only been in two groups where they talk about, where actually in the format, they utilize what's in our format, our three legacies that are a useful guide for me to learn how to apply all these beautiful principles into my way of living, my higher power's way. Yeah, my way of living. I always try to make it my way of living, but truly what I want is my higher power's way of living this life. And that's why I turn my life over every morning, my thinking, my feeling, my even my future dreams and my way of doing. And I exchange that for my higher power's way. And multiple times through the day, I find. But and particularly on Tradition One, it was interesting because I was meditating on that one day. And I had this thought come to me about, okay, our common welfare comes first, should come first. And the thought came to me, well, what comes second? And I go, really? You want me to think about that? And as I thought about that, all of a sudden the thought came to me, well, okay, what comes second? What comes second for me is not only do I need to be focused on what comes first, our common welfare, what's common, but how are we different? So in that first tradition, what I am finding is I need to be flexible. You know, there's that beautiful spiritual principle of flexibility, and I need to be considerate of others. There's a difference for me between being considerate and being a doormat and being able to discover what the difference is between those two things. So for me, Tradition One is all about learning how to love others, whereas in the steps, I learn how to love myself, and in the concepts, I learn how to love the world at large. That's my thoughts on Tradition One. I'll pass.
Great. Thank you, Patrick, for sharing. I'm going to ask another question. Let's see. This is to everybody. How has humility played a part in your service work? Did you have a contentious service position? And how did you grow from that experience? Let's see. Christine, I'm sorry. I keep picking on you. I don't know why.
You keep picking on me first.
I know, right?
Oh, that's funny. So humility, how have I worked through that? Being able to understand that we are all in this together. It is a common bond we have, that we are working towards a common goal. I don't go to my service meetings at the area level or the district level or my group level. I don't go in any longer to go against someone. I go in with everyone. And remembering that is very helpful to me. If I can go in and be a unit, be united with everyone and not pit other people against each other, it really helps to move the goal forward. So humility is a big thing. Christine is not the end all and be all. I'm only another Al-Anon member sitting at an Al-Anon meeting with usually a voice and one vote. And that I have to remember. Thanks.
Thank you. Teresa, can you answer that question as well?
Yeah, humility does not come naturally to me because boy, don't I think I know, right? And I think about humility meaning teachability. And I like what you just said, Christine, about in the group. I'm just one member. Where my mind went to was because I am by nature a leader. You know, I've got that, I got leadership qualities that, you know, like when there's a task, I dive in and I lead, you know, and it's not that I try to do it. It's where I go. And I talked to my sponsor about this a lot, the difference between taking charge of a task and trying to be in control, you know, because they're two different things. And I had a situation come up with our COMIAC, our Kentucky, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Alateen Conference a couple years ago. I was very heavily involved in the planning. And the day before we all came together to meet at the college campus to execute this thing, the person in charge had an emergency and couldn't be there. So we have a bunch of people meeting to do stuff, but there wasn't the person there, the hub of the wheel, right? Nobody was doing it. So what do? I jumped in, and in my mind, I'm thinking, man, I know they're thinking I'm trying to control this. I wasn't trying to be controlling. I was trying to take charge of a task. And as I was doing it, I was saying, I don't want to be in control. We need to get this done. And it's just going to be helpful if one person is sort of the hub to make sure that everything's organized. I struggle with that, to maintain humility while being in charge of a task. I still don't have the answers. I'm still working on it. So maybe Elaine's got some ideas on that. Thanks.
Do you have anything to add, Elaine?
Oh, that's funny. you know, I think for me, humility was the whole basis of my program, because of the very idea that, to be humble is to be teachable. And I certainly was not teachable when I got here. I didn't want to, hear anything that I already knew or thought I knew. And, you know, if you would just listen to me, I know everything. And I guess for me, humility really presents itself when I do take a position and realize that, you know, I'm just there to delegate work, getting help from a committee, and being open to other people knowing more than I do. That was a huge thing, you know, with the first position. I just thought, well, I'm a bookkeeper. I know what to do. I can do this. It's pretty easy. It's just a checkbook. And I did require some assistance at times, and being able to realize that, and to realize that there were other people that knew, that had that experience before me. My entire program today is, about knowing that I don't know everything, and that, for me, I've learned to really love taking a position and just allowing the other members that are working with me to do their thing and not have to direct them at every given moment, or to be worried about an outcome because I think somebody's not doing their job right. And I carry that into my family too. You know, I was always the mom that would go, oh, you missed a spot. you need to do that again because you missed a spot. And, you know, today I don't have to be like that. And it's such a relief to just be able to allow others to experience their own process, and to stand back and watch the growth happen instead of forcing an outcome and, create chaos in the situation.
I like that, experience their own outcome. I need to remember that as well. Melody has agreed to speak for a couple of minutes on the topic.
Hi, everybody. I'm Melody, and I absolutely love Tradition 1. The word humility is what comes to my mind as well with this tradition. We're putting the common welfare first, helps me to learn to be open-minded, to know that I have ideas and I can express them, but I'm not the only one with good ideas. Other people have them, and I can allow other people to express their ideas and work through a compromise to do what's best for everybody. And the really important part of this tradition for me is the understanding that when I do that, when I go with what's best for the common welfare, I benefit from that much more so than if I'm fighting it or, not supporting the common welfare, wanting things to be my way. I may think initially, if I get my way, that's I might be happy about that. But in the long run, I suffer, my recovery suffers, my relationship suffers. What really stood out for me in the reading was I began to understand as well that when I felt no sense of unity with others, my personal welfare suffered. And when it comes, when it comes to service right now, with our current situation, not being able to meet face-to-face, for me, it has kind of affected my feeling of unity with the fellowship as a whole. But it's been through my service that I've remained connected in various ways, not just through meetings, but service meetings and projects, working on service projects, working with other people, and today there's people who are being of service to put this workshop on, which has brought all of us from all around the country together in unity to talk about Tradition One and to talk about recovery. I have one of my meetings meets on Friday, which is this year it's Christmas and it's New Year's, that we're meeting by Zoom, and it's my Zoom account. And so I've made that commitment to be there 10:15 Friday morning, like Christmas and New Year's. And without that commitment, without that service commitment, I don't know that I would get up on Christmas Day and attend a meeting. So I'm grateful for that commitment and grateful that I can provide that service to other people and give them a place to go, especially since the holidays can be difficult when you're living with the family disease of alcoholism. So thank you to your speakers. You've all been wonderful today. And thank you, Maureen, for asking me to speak.
Thanks, Melody, for sharing. Next question I have. Okay, to all the speakers, if you are fearful to take an action, how do you work through it? I'm not going to pick on Christine. I'm gonna go with Elaine this time.
I would have to say that I probably had some amount of fear with every position that I took. My greatest resource in Al-Anon is the other members of Al-Anon. Having a sponsor to go to, and if my sponsor's not available, having just another member of the program. It doesn't have to be anybody that has experience with what I'm going through. Most of the time I end up calling somebody, and like we experience when we sponsor, they just listen. And by the time I get done, spewing what I need to spew, somehow the resolution is there, or the courage to just carry on is there. And I really do so appreciate the encouragement that I receive from my friends in Al-Anon. Many, I would have never taken any service positions had I not known that I would somehow be supported in doing that, because, I wasn't somebody who was just going to step up and take a position when I came here. I think it was said earlier, I felt like, why should I serve people? I've been trying to do stuff for people my entire life and nobody has appreciated what I've done, And I wasn't going to do service work. My spouse at the time was involved in AA, and, to him, service work was political and it was all about politics. So I kind of came into this thing with that ideology. And I just so appreciate, that working with that first sponsor who was hardcore into service just went, shared her experience, strength, and hope with what service did for me. And I had said something earlier too about sponsorship, you know, about my sponsees doing service work. I don't require that they do it, but I certainly suggest it. And I kind of get them manipulated into it by saying, hey, I need help with something. Would you be willing to help me? And it really does help them to feel part of, because that's what it did for me when my sponsor would call and say, Elaine, what are you doing this weekend? And I'd say, well, nothing. And she'd go, well, I've got a workshop in Minot and I need some help. Come with me. And we would head off for the weekend. And that made me feel part of this thing by participating. So thank you.
Thanks, Elaine. Three's up.
When I'm scared, I pray like hell, and then I call my sponsor. It's just that simple. That's all I do.
Thanks. Christine, how do you work through fear?
So the fear to take action, I usually research a little bit to find out, what am I so afraid of? It's usually something that's gone on in the past that or something, lack of knowing. I don't enjoy not knowing. I like to be prepared. So first thing I do is I pray. Second thing I do is I call my service sponsor. And then third thing I'll do is I'll reach out to someone else who has done the position or who has been involved in the position. And they usually are a wealth of information. Fourth thing I do, which is new to Michigan, is we've just put together service position guidelines, and they are out there on our Google Drive. And what a difference that made, because now I can just go to the Google Drive and say, okay, I've just taken on this position, which I did when I just was elected as the area delegate. What is my responsibility? Instead of it being in someone else's head and they have to explain it to me, now I have a piece of paper. So now I have a head start, and now I can talk to them about the in-between lines. It made a great difference for me when it came to fear of raising my hand for service work.
Perfect, thank you. I think I'm gonna ask, Danielle, she's agreed to speak for a couple minutes too today. Would you please share with us on Tradition One?
Sure. Hi, my name is Danielle. Tradition One, I'm going to read Tradition One again. It's, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. And a little bit about myself. I'm the granddaughter of an alcoholic. And so the environment that I grew up in, I always just wanted to go along to get along, and whatever you want to do, that's fine with me. I'll be easygoing, and I just didn't want to make any waves. I just, you know, wanted to make everybody else happy. I was a people pleaser. When I started taking on service positions, when I joined Al-Anon, I was a group rep for a little while, and I was the Al-Anon chair of our local Tri-County Conference. And I'm currently the treasurer for my home group. But even in the running of the meetings, when we have group conscience meetings, it's really important for me to speak up and let my voice be heard, and to express my needs. And that's what Tradition One it means to me, is I have to speak up and express my opinion and let my voice be heard, and then let go of the result and turn it over to my higher power and trust that whatever is best for the group and for the greatest number of people, and to go along with that. But still, it's important for me to speak up and let my voice be heard, which also reminds me of concept four, and that participation is the key to harmony. So it's, you know, when we have group conscience meetings and with the allocation of funds, and I'm the treasurer of my home group now, and so, you know, how much do we give to our local office, how much do we give to the state, how much do we give to world, like those allocations, that's I can say what I think it should be, but ultimately it's the group's decision. And so that's really what Tradition One means to me, is speaking up, letting my voice be heard, and then turning the result over to my higher power. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much. I'm going to ask one more question. I think we've got enough time for this one. I believe Elaine, well, you all might have mentioned it, alternates. If you don't have an alternate for a service position that you are doing right now or asked to do, and nobody wants to be an alternate, how do you go about getting somebody to do that? Or do you just ask somebody as it needed? Like, I can't come today, will you do it?
And actually, when I was our district representative, I did not have an alternate. And it is that way today also for the current DR. In situations like that, I did not miss any of my meetings, but I knew that there were past DRs in the district that could chair the meeting. I had like four, I think, past DRs that were still involved in Al-Anon service that I could have asked. And of course, my secretary could have taken the position and recorded the meeting. I would have trusted my treasurer to do that. That is one of the things that I've been really lucky with, is I've never really found myself in a position where there wasn't somebody that I could depend on. And in a situation where it would be at a meeting, if there was absolutely nobody, well, it wasn't going to destroy our district if I canceled a meeting 1 month. We meet every month except for the month of July, and there's 11 more months in the year. So that was one of the things too that I had to come to realize, that because something wasn't going to happen, it wasn't going to be the end of everything. It wasn't catastrophic, that we could recover, and there's very little recovery that needed to happen in a situation like that. So I think that's kind of how I've gotten through, most all of my positions, is knowing that there's other people out there that are experienced, that are willing to help.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, we're almost out of time. So at this time, I think I will turn it back over to the chairperson. Thank you so much, everybody, for participating. The 2-minute speakers and all your questions were great. Thanks.
Thanks, Maureen. Great job. Thanks for everybody who spoke. And we will close with the Al-Anon Declaration. Let it begin with me. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon always be there.
Let it begin with me.